From WCMU Public Media, this is Between the Lakes, a weekly recap of the top news stories impacting Central and Northern Michigan. I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Coming up on the show, Michigan has more local governments with mandated jobs than almost any state in the country. And getting people to do those jobs is challenging, especially in rural areas.
And that may have made sense back in the 1800s when this system was set up. But those jobs that we're asking people to do have become much more complex and time-consuming.
More on what the state is looking to do to try and fix some of these problems. And this week's Brain Teaser may leave you feeling batty, trying to find the answer. But we'll get to it right after this. As trade relations between the U.S. and Canada appear to break down, Great Lakes shipping industry leaders say the conflict could make business more expensive. President Donald Trump has levied a 50% tariff on many Canadian goods, and he has threatened a similar tariff on Canadian steel and car parts. Canada has levied what it calls dollar-for-dollar tariffs. Jason Card is with the Chamber of Marine Commerce. They represent shipping interests in the U.S. and Canada. He warns the trade wars will drive up prices for raw materials that cross the Great Lakes for car making.
But the base goods, the steel, the aluminum, that kind of the thing, once you start adding the cost there, everything becomes more expensive. And we're already in a time when autos have never been more expensive.
American shipping industry leaders have supported the tariffs in the past, arguing they will boost domestic production. Indigenous protesters and their allies gathered in Lansing this week to call for an end to the Line 5 oil and natural gas pipeline. Colin Jackson has more.
Line 5 runs from Wisconsin to Ontario, passing through Michigan and the Straits of Mackinac along the way. For years, environmentalists have fought its operation, and they plan to build a tunnel around the Great Lakes portion to protect it. Both topics are currently under review by state and federal officials. Activist Nicole Kiway-Biber says the rally helps turn up pressure on policymakers.
Take a clear position. Are you going to be an unwavering ally to protect the waters, or are you going to just try to hide from it? I think people are really tired of those who would rather hide.
Enbridge, the company that owns Line 5, says it's committed to safety. I'm Colin Jackson in Lansing.
The Michigan Supreme Court will now decide whether a proposed state constitutional amendment to tighten the state's voter ID laws belongs on the ballot. The campaign Americans for Citizens Voting Michigan sued Thursday after a state elections board this week didn't advance its measure. Now, the board couldn't agree whether to accept late proof that the campaign collected enough valid signatures to qualify in the face of challenges. And the case could hinge on whether a requirement to submit materials 48 hours before a meeting should apply to the campaign's attempts to resolve signature disputes. The court will likely need to act quickly as the deadline to finalize the November ballot is coming up next month. A new report from the Michigan Attorney General's office shed some light on the prosecutorial decisions made in criminal cases related to the Flint water crisis. The cases did not result in any criminal convictions. After the Michigan Supreme Court threw out the one-person grand jury process prosecutors used to build the cases. Attorney General Dana Nessel says it's impossible to overlook the fact that former Governor Rick Snyder appointed three of the justices serving on the court when they unanimously voted to throw out a century of precedent.
What were our prosecutors supposed to do? You know, I'd like the Supreme Court to recuse itself from being the Supreme Court. Well, that's unprecedented. What would you do if you had to say, I think that all three of them need to recuse themselves?
Snyder was one of the defendants charged. Justice Elizabeth Clement recused herself from the cases after previously serving as Snyder's chief legal counsel. Schools across Michigan are starting to implement programs to boost student literacy rates. WCMU's Blaise Carpenter has more.
As school bells call students and teachers back into the classroom this month, the state's education department is implementing new literacy training programs. Currently, Michigan ranks near the bottom in the nation for reading, and state lawmakers have been trying to fix that. In July, Governor Gretchen Whitmer signed a bill that would require every elementary school teacher to take mandatory literacy training by 2031. Eric Harmson is the superintendent of Crossroads Charter Academy in Big Rapids. He says the program will help put their students back on track.
It's so important for students to be able to read by third grade.
His school was one of 17 districts that recently received grant funding for literacy training. Harmson says it can take teachers around 2 years to complete. I'm Blaise Carpenter, WCMU News.
And Michiganders can still apply for federal relief following a string of natural disasters this spring. But the deadline is this coming Monday, August 31st. Survivors can apply through the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA, if their home or property sustained damage. Businesses can also apply for low-interest loans through the Small Business Administration. Clayton Cummins is with the Michigan State Police. He says people should apply even if they don't think they'll get any relief.
Better to have your case reviewed than not and miss out on, potential financial assistance.
Historic flooding pummeled over half the state for several days last April following heavy rain and snowmelt. 9 tornadoes also touched down in southwest Michigan. And now it's time for this week's Brain Teaser. I'll pull from a hat either a random fun fact, a riddle, or a quiz question, all meant to tease your brain this weekend. So, let's draw. It's a Michigan bat question. Today, August 29th, is Bat Day, so let's get to the Bat Cave for the Brain Teaser. Today's question is, this location on the Manistee River in Michigan hosts the state's largest surviving bat colony. Where is it? Again, this location on the Manistee River in Michigan hosts the state's largest surviving bat colony. Where is it? Hang around for the answer right after this. Over half of Michigan's population lives in townships. And in rural northern Michigan, there is an ongoing struggle to find people to serve in local government. WCMU's David Nicholas spoke with Ron French of Bridge, Michigan, about his reporting on communities trying to fill these open positions.
Your reporting notes that the state has mandates for how much local governance is required. And are those numbers the same across all of these townships and all of these villages?
That's one of the challenges. It's one thing for a larger township in a suburban area. It's another thing when you're talking about a township like I visited in the Upper Peninsula with a total population of 72 that has some challenges finding people to fill those jobs. Michigan has more local governments with more mandated responsibilities than almost any other state. And that may have made sense back in the 1800s when this system was set up. But those jobs that we're asking people to do have become much more complex and time-consuming, and they're still very part-time and very low-paid.
Why hasn't the state done something to change this structure, this model that we use?
That's a very good question. A lot of states have begun to pull back on local government. I know that Indiana is currently weeding out a lot of its townships. They're merging them into larger townships. Iowa is getting rid of some. Illinois, the governor there is a big proponent of downsizing the township system they have there. Only 20 states in the country have townships anyway. But why is it the way it is in Michigan? There are probably a couple of reasons. One, Michigan's very well known for local control. People like their government as close to them as possible. And there are a lot of good reasons for that, because local people know what the issues are locally. It makes sense. And so I get that. The challenge here has been that townships, for one, are in the Michigan Constitution. We can't just wipe them away. But the legislature could decrease the number of responsibilities they have, one of them obviously being running our elections. That's a heck of an important job. And that job is being done by a lot of part-time people who are very low paid, many of them senior citizens. And it's becoming more of a challenge over time. The legislature could pull away some of those responsibilities if they had the will to do it. As far as why they have not, there are a lot of legislators who from rural areas, and the Michigan Township Association is a very, very powerful lobby. And so there's not a lot of will in Lansing to take on an issue like this until it becomes an emergency. I can tell you that the Michigan Township Association says that this isn't a crisis yet, but it is on the horizon, and they think that eventually there's going to be some townships that just cannot find people to fill those jobs, and it's going to be a challenge to actually collect taxes and run elections.
Would they look at consolidation at any point, or has anyone in the Township Association floated that idea as a possible solution? Will it be practical?
The last time a township merged with another unit of government was in the 1980s. It just is very rarely done. It's very rarely even considered. The way the law is set up now, if two townships, for example, are merging or want to merge to try to be more efficient and frankly, increase the number of people who might be available to sit on a township board, both township governments have to vote to do this. Then it goes to a vote of the voters of each of those townships. And both of them have to pass it. It's a high bar to overcome. Is it possible? It absolutely is. The state could make it easier if they wanted to, but there's not really been a discussion of that.
The article is called Rural Michigan in Crisis, Too Many Governments That Too Few Want to Lead. Ron French with Bridge Magazine. Ron, thanks very much for your reporting and taking the time to talk with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now it's time to reveal the answer to this week's Brain Teaser. Today's question is, this location on the Manistee River in Michigan hosts the state's largest surviving bat colony. Where is it? Again, this location on the Manistee River in Michigan hosts the state's largest surviving bat colony. Where could it be? The answer is the Tippy Dam. The Tippy Dam near Manistee is home to over 26,000 bats inside the concrete hydroelectric structure. Now, it's a major refuge for little brown bats and some tricolored bats. Scientists think the reason there's a large number is because the way the structure is built for airflow and sunlight exposure and fluctuations in temperature, and it keeps that colony stable and healthy, allowing them to grow to great numbers. Now, if you winged that answer and didn't get it, it's okay. And if you did, fantastic. Enough of the puns. That's all for this edition of Between the Lakes. Don't forget to subscribe to the Between the Lakes newsletter, linked in the show notes, where you're going to find more of our reporting and analysis from across the region. Visit our website, wcmu.org, to find out how to listen to your local WCMU radio station. This podcast is produced in part by the members of NABIT Local 412. It was edited and mixed by Rick Brewer. Our theme music comes from Gabe Shaw. Mike Horace is our executive producer, and I'm your host, Tina Sawyer. Have a fantastic rest of your weekend.